This hour of SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by the Orthopedic Center. Highly skilled professionals, world-class care. Learn more at visittoc.com. Now back to Tom Abraham at SEC Media Days. Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, this week, but I'm not.
And welcome back. Hour number three of the Tom Abraham Show here on location, SEC Media Days. And, of course, this hour of the show brought to you by our good friends at the Orthopedic Center in Huntsville, the TOC. Tremendous doctors, six of them there to handle the sports side of things. Dr. Greco is the one that my son has seen a few times. And look, if I'm sending my son to Doc Greco, you would be wise to do the same thing for yourself or for anyone you know, the docs at the TOC. All right, as I promised, well, since yesterday, basically, Phil Savage, very, very busy guy, very just a swamped guy. he had to add author to everything else that he is doing, and he now joins us here. Phil, welcome to the set. How are you, man?
I'm good, Tom. Glad to be here. Just finished up a little over 3.5 hours of radio on SiriusXM.
Yeah.
They get going a little bit late on the rotation, so we just finished up Coach Jim McElwain.
Yeah.
He's a good friend of mine,
yeah,
and so it's always great to catch up with him. But good to see you, and glad to be on the ump.
Man, it's been a theme, it seems like, of almost every coach at some point in time. They've been asking Nick Saban question. I mean, it's crazy. And, of course, with McElwain and Kirby this morning, these are Nick Saban disciples. But it does seem to be that everybody gets asked a question about your time with Nick Saban. Catching up with Alabama. What's the difference between Alabama? What do you got to do to beat Alabama at LSU? I mean, it's just like there's Alabama and everybody else trying to get there.
Yeah, that's been certainly a theme yesterday and today in terms of who is going to rise up out of this conference to challenge Alabama. And no one's done it better than the Tide, three-time conference champion in a row. They're going for a fourth title in a row this year. And you look at the East, and I mean, historically, traditionally, recruiting base wise, Georgia, Florida, and probably Tennessee are the three teams that should be perennial contenders.
Right.
And so, which two of those three, can all three rise up in the next few years? Two of which are under the leadership of coaches that spent time with Nick Saban. Yeah. That's the idea that Georgia and Florida had when they hired Jim McElwain and Kirby Smart. Can we replicate in a modified sense under these two individuals what Alabama's done in the West?
And it's not, I mean, this was the first time Saban won three in a row. They're going to be heavily favored to win the fourth SEC West Division. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's something that he didn't do real early on, in his run there, even when they win a national championship against LSU and so on. And I think people are taking it for granted as if this is something that's just, okay, there's Alabama, and then that's a tough thing to do, and you still better go 7-1 or 8-0 to win the division.
I tell you, Tom, you mentioned author. I've got a new book coming out at the end of August called Fourth and Goal Every Day, and one of the reasons I wanted to write the book was to really get into the point of it's tough to win. people do just take it for granted. They think that Bama just rolls the helmets out there and wins every game,
right.
And that's just not the case. There's a ton of work that goes on behind the scenes as this team and program prepares to win every day. And as I've said numerous times already this week, Bama doesn't win on Saturdays. They win the other 350 days out of the year,
right,
in preparation for those games on Saturdays or Monday night if it's a national championship game.
It was interesting because when I read the headline in AL.com about the book, and I can't wait to read the book, but you know, the headline was Five Things We Learned from Phil Savage's Upcoming Book on Nick Saban. And it was a little, I kind of took a double take. This isn't really a book on Nick Saban, right? This is a book about the Alabama way, maybe, yeah, but not necessarily. You didn't just author the Nick Saban book.
Yeah, I did a double take on the headline, too, because it's certainly not a book on Nick Saban. It's not an autobiography by any stretch of the imagination. But, Tom, it's basically a football book, and it's a story told through the eyes of somebody who spent 30 years in the game, who grew up in this state when Coach Paul Bear Bryant was dominating the scene in the 70s, where it seemed like Alabama was in it every year. It's told through the eyes of someone who, as a young coach and scout, spent time with Bill Belichick and Nick Saban in Cleveland, in Berea, where I think a lot of their philosophy was formulated, at least in my opinion.
Right.
My theory is that a lot of what was put together that we've seen come to fruition with the Patriots and with Alabama was birthed, if you will, in Berea, Ohio, of all places. And to be the color analyst the last 8 years and be part of this ride and watch it happen, I just felt like that it would be a fascinating story for people to read.
I got to tell you the story because it's funny when you mention Berea. It's 1992, 93, or 94, somewhere in that little window of time there. I'm coaching at a small college in Western New York, and we would make the rounds as, you know, the visiting coaches, you know, from the colleges and so on. And then we had gone over to Chicago, and Dave Wanstead was over there, and we'd spent some time in Buffalo. And you get different. John Butler was the director of scouting then, and Bill Polian was the head of, and so different guys would do different things. Polian would come in and we'd play cards together, you know, with the college coaches and things like that. So we set up some time to go to Berea, and we got to go see, you know, because this Bill Belichick is taking over there now, and it's his first head coaching job. And it was so stringent there, and it was Belichick, and then there's this young Nick Saban that's there, that's the defensive coordinator, and there's this bunch of guys that are. It was so beautifully done in that piece, you know, Cleveland 95 or whatever, that ESPN piece. And I think you were one of the guys that was, you know, you were with that group of young guys. Pioli was there. And you think about all the guys that were there that were working that ultimately blossomed into these great careers.
I think that staff
Mangini
ended up with six head coaches and six general managers.
That's crazy.
And we could barely win six games a year with the exception of 1994 when the Browns went 11-5 and made the playoffs.
And people think I'm crazy when I say, you know, because they keep on to talk about Bill Belichick's failure in Cleveland. And I'm like, wait a minute. Bill Belichick turned that thing around. He had the guts to move on from Bernie Kosar and go with Vinny Testaverde. They win a playoff game. They beat Bill Parcells and the Patriots. And they were, I believe, favored to win the AFC in 1995 going in. And then, you know, the announcement comes and can't win another game.
November 6, 1995, day that lives in infamy in Cleveland as it pertains to the Browns. But, yeah, and again, Bill was there for 5 years. We had one winning season, and that goes back to the point that winning is not easy.
Right.
And neither Bill Belichick nor Nick Saban take for granted a single item on the agenda of the outline of winning. And that's why it's fourth and goal every day.
Yeah, it is fourth and goal every day for them. Phil Savage with us, of course, also color commentator for the Crimson Tide radio network. And good luck, Charm, as well, right? Because ever since you've been around, I mean, just one national championship after another. Do you ever sit back and say, I'm part of a broadcast crew that's bringing the fans, arguably what is now the greatest, you know, there's been these, the early 60s, the late 70s, you know, you bookend ends of Bear Bryant's career. But it's never been greater. This is the heyday, if there ever was a heyday, four and seven years.
It's a very special time, and this is going to be an era of college football in terms of this decade of dominance under Nick Saban that will be talked about 50, 60, 70 years from now in terms of what this team has accomplished I tell a story in the book that, you know, my first year was 2009. Well, Bama goes 14-0 that year, started off 5-0 the next year. So we're 19-0. And Eli would tell me at the end of every broadcast, well, we won again. You get to come back again. And so I told people, I said, I don't know if I'm any good or not, but I think they keep bringing me back because we're winning.
Yeah, right. Well, my oldest granddaughter is named Crimson. And and it's only because my daughter is an artist and she loved the color crimson. But we always joked about it being. And she now is 10. She's going to be 10, 9. She's 9 years old now. So that's how it was for her. I mean, she went a couple of years that they never lost a game. And I remember saying to my son-in-law that, man, I'll tell you what. I mean, this little girl, you know, of course, she does Roll Tide and all this stuff. She thinks that this is the way it's always been and always will be, that they just win football games. Phil Savage with us. The book is Fourth and Goal Every Day, Alabama's Relentless Pursuit of Perfection. One of the things that I thought was fascinating in the book was that you prepare your own little game plan, if you will, your own scouting report, something that you were very proficient in throughout your career in the NFL as well. And it apparently you just gave this to unsolicited to Nick Saban, and it has been something that ever since it he has continued to take a look at, and, you know, whatever he uses.
Yeah, it was just preparation for the radio broadcast 2009 over the summer, getting ready for Virginia Tech. And Coach Saban's assistant's a lady named Linda Leone. She's one of my dear friends in the game. She was my assistant when I was the GM of the Browns. Yeah. And so about 10 days before the game, I said, hey, here are my radio notes. It's some bathroom reading for Nick.
Yeah.
And so didn't think anything of it. Well, the following week, we're playing Florida International. And on a Monday morning, I get these frantic calls saying, hey, where are those notes? And I'm like, what notes? They said, for FIU. And here we are 110 games later. But look, the notes that I prepare, they're like cliff notes compared to what the coaches and the staff prepare. And, you know, I do it the same way if I was just doing it for myself. But I thought it might add a little something to it. And again, because of the superstitions of sports, I think probably some of that bled into all of this. Yeah. But nevertheless,
I think you're selling yourself a little short. It might be more than superstition.
The reality is that you said it right. Most people get a chance to maybe broadcast one national championship game or one SEC championship game, and to be able to be a part of five of the last eight and Bama to hoist the trophy four times out of those five. I mean, it's been a remarkable run.
With you, when you're looking at prepping for a game, and it kind of dovetails with what you do with the Senior Bowl as the executive director of the Senior Bowl, are you more a personnel guy? I mean, are you looking at X's and O's, or are you looking at Jimmy's and Joe's when you're kind of breaking
it down? I try to do a little bit of both. I usually try to get a sense of maybe what the team's overall philosophy would be, X's and O's wise, but I definitely am watching the seniors. You know, in doing the Bama games, I can't travel on Saturdays to see other teams. So I go to a lot of weeknight games, typically Thursday nights. When the MAC goes into action in November, those Tuesday and Wednesday night games, I usually go to some of those. And so between about 25 school visits during the fall for practices, during training camp, et cetera, the 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 Bama games and their opponents, and then of course, a couple weeknight games, I usually get a chance to see about 40 to 45 schools in person during the fall. And that, of course, helps us put our roster together. You know, just so there's never any question about it, there's only been two occasions where I actually went to a school that Bama ended up playing. Right. And they were both during training camp. I was on the tour with Sirius XM. And so I had friends there, and they said, don't worry about it. We're in training camp. If we end up playing Alabama, we end up playing them.
Right.
Or we're playing them later in the year, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So I don't want people to get the wrong idea.
Is that still a passion of yours? I mean, obviously in your time in scouting in the NFL and as a GM and whatnot, I mean, personnel is so important. I'm a big player development guy. I mean, we saw what Nick Saban did in year two, you know, with the team that went 12-0. And he was just starting to get his own players in that. But for you, is it a passion to look at young men and say, you know what, that's an NFL player, or that's a guy that's going to be, you know, excel at this level?
Yeah, I love to do it. And, you know, our staff takes very seriously the selection procedure for the Reese's Senior Bowl, because in essence, virtually every kid that gets invited to the Senior Bowl will be drafted or signed to an NFL contract.
Right.
And so it's a hugely important step for them, because if you get to the Reese's Senior Bowl, that almost guarantees that you're going to get a shot in the NFL.
Right.
If you get an invite to the combine, it's 335 players. Only 250 are drafted, and that is not a guarantee that you're
right.
going to be drafted. And there is a bit of a difference there, and so we take it very seriously in terms of the guys we choose. And, you know, oftentimes we end up having players that, that get injured in their bowl game. They're not 100% healthy, so they end up not coming to the game.
Right.
We have a bit of a gentleman's agreement with some of the other All-Star games that we won't pirate their players once they're sort of underway, because those games occur before ours.
Right.
So sometimes we end up having to go to like a next level or notch below. And those are typically the players from our game that don't get drafted. They end up, they are more replacement type candidates.
Right.
But we've had a few come in late that ended up doing A-OK.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard Sherman was one. How about that? Fifth round pick from Stanford. Now, that was before my time, but still, it can happen.
Not that people don't, you know, didn't know who Carson Wentz was, but I mean, he, you know, he shot up everybody's board once he went to the Senior Bowl, right? I mean, this kid comes out.
Yeah,
a little,
I had several personnel people in the league call me in December and say, "Hey, the kid that you've got coming down from North Dakota State, he's probably at least a second rounder." I would guess that he's probably going to be a first rounder.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of that week, people were saying he's not only a first rounder, he's top 10. And then he took it from there at the combine in the pro days,
right,
and ultimately became the number two pick in the draft.
Can guys play in multiple games? I mean, people ask me that all the time. Can they play in two?
In the old days, guys used to play in more than one game. Nowadays, most of the agents will recommend that their players only play one. There are usually anywhere from 5 to 10 players that will double up and play two. It's almost like a battlefield promotion.
Yeah, right.
The NFLPA game or the East-West, if someone does particularly well and we have a spot open, sometimes we'll say, "Hey, I know it's going to be a little bit more difficult, but we only have 3 days of practice. Come on into Mobile and you'll get a chance to get compared to these other players." And most of the time, the players will accept that offer.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Phil Savage with us. And that's a year-round gig too, right? I mean, that's not like it's something that, I mean, it's constantly, and it's still the Reese's Senior Bowl,
still the
Bowl,
Reese's
right?
Senior
yeah.
Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a nice announcement about Reese's probably in the month of August.
Great relationship, yeah.
It's been a good partnership for us. And, you know, between Reese's and Adidas and Morgan Stanley Global Sports and Entertainment, they do the financial education piece for the players during
right.
the week. Those are three national partners that we're affiliated with, and they've done a great job for us.
The book comes out August 29th, Fourth and Goal Every Day, Alabama's Relentless Pursuit of Perfection. And Nick Saban is not going to do a press conference screaming match about how when he wants to talk about himself, he'll write his own book. I would imagine he's vetted this one. And
yeah, I hope not. You know, he did do a nice forward for it. It's yeah. a one-page forward. I don't think he's probably read all of the book. There's probably some things that he won't be all that happy
yeah.
about. But at the end of the day, I think to tell the story, there's certainly places where you have to go a bit to the edge to bring it back to say, now you know the rest of the story.
Well, the Lane Kiffin thing, you know, gained a lot of interest and so on. And I think that that's going to be one of the real interesting things, because I think that Lane Kiffin was such a big personality, if you will, that I think it lost in the mix is the fact that he was the offensive coordinator during a very prolific time in Alabama offensive football, and we got to give him credit for that. Even though Coach Saban was very involved, got to give him credit for that.
He took Alabama to another level, another iteration of modernized football with the no huddle and some of the spread elements that were brought to the table. And, of course, the story you referenced, of course, was the Western Kentucky game a year ago, but essentially, the reason I told the story was because I wanted to show that Coach Saban puts the players first.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, he's seen as this stern taskmaster, and he is, but the players are always at the top of the food chain when it comes to Alabama football.
And you know from all your years in football, too, is that that's not a very unusual interaction on a sideline. I spent a half a show on it that day that came out, and I said, "Guys, you wouldn't." I started telling stories of things that were said to me as
no
a special
doubt.
Teams coordinator. I said, "You won't believe the things that a coach will say to another coach, especially when something goes wrong."
Of course,
I mean,
it's very emotional.
Brothers.
It's very emotional, and it's part of the fabric of the game and part of the fabric of what was the story of the 2016 season.
Yeah, it's good stuff, and we'll see how it goes. And Brian DeBall or Dayball, is it Dayball or DeBall?
I've called it Brian Dayball.
That's what. Yeah. He was another guy that came through this whole mix of all. Wasn't he a ball boy in Cleveland at one time?
He was a graduate assistant for Nick at Michigan State,
right,
and then went from there to the Patriots.
Right,
and he had been at the Patriots on three different occasions. So if you get brought back three times by Bill Belichick, you've got something going for you.
It's going to be fun to see the way that goes. All right, well, congratulations on the book. Good luck with that. It's always good to talk to you here. And,
thanks, Tom. I appreciate
Senior Bowl
it. Love the coaching perspective you bring to the radio.
I appreciate you saying
good
that.
Deal.
Thank you. All right,
okay.
Phil Savage. There you go. Great job by Phil, and the book's going to be very, very interesting. And and I just got handed one, so I'm very excited. Okay, there you go. Oh, I got a little inside info maybe with this one here. We'll see. All right, coming up, Gary Danielson will be joining us here in a few minutes, and we'll talk a little bit with him. Let's see now. The one that Phil handed me here is this is the book before the book, T-Mac. It says on the top of wait a minute here. This is the uncorrected proof. That's kind of cool. I should have had Phil sign it. That's kind of cool, though, isn't it, T-Mac? It says on the top, advanced uncorrected proof, and it's the book that is not the. It's
the
like the cover. It's the release book, on the cover, it has like what the cover of the book is going to be like, but it's not the cover of the book. If you know what I mean.
I get what you're saying. Wow, that's not bad.
I'm stoked about that.
I wonder how uncorrected it is.
I'm kind of fired up, and it's got a bunch of pages at the end that are blank for stuff, for notes and things like that. You know what? I never ask anybody to sign anything, but I should have had Phil sign that in terms of personalizing it. That'd be a very cool thing. I'm stoked about that. All right, when we return. Again, as I said yesterday, this is all very fluid, okay? So Gary Danielson scheduled to join us here in a little bit, but it depends on what's going on with his schedule with CBS, and so he'll either be with us here shortly or sometime in the 5 or sometime before we go off the air. That's all I know about that. I know Adam Zucker is going to be joining us tomorrow to kick the show off at 2:25. We were talking to Adam right before Phil came on as well. All right, let's get a break. We'll come back with more from SEC Media Days. We have got some sound as well from Mullen and Jim McElwain, so we'll see if we can gather up some of that for you as well. It's the Tom Abraham Show. Back with more after this on 730-1039. The Ump.
Now back to the big dog. Bark, bark. This hour of SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by the Orthopedic Center. Highly skilled professionals, world-class care. Learn more at visittoc.com. Now back to Tom Abraham at SEC Media Days.
For Alabama. SEC Media Days here in Hoover. By the way, flash flood warnings, that storm that blew through here. Things have calmed down now out there as well. But, man, there was some heavy, heavy rain and wind that rolled through this area. Want to thank Phil Savage for coming by, and we appreciate Phil so much and the work that he does. And my relationship with him goes back beyond just radio, going back to some other things that we had done back in the day as well. And it's always good to be able to catch up with him. All right, Gary Danielson is scheduled to join us here in a little bit, but he is hung up right now doing some stuff for CBS. So in the meantime, let's take a listen. We will get him. He'll be in here at some point in time today. But in the meantime, let's take a listen to what Jim McElwain had to say, Florida coach who spoke just a few moments ago.
Hey, Jim. Matt Smith, Southern Pigskin. First, kind of dip of the toe in the water for Florida with these neutral site games. Is the preparation any different? Obviously, you played in a bunch in Colorado CSU games when you were out there.
That's right.
Is it easier to motivate them having that lure of that first game, especially against a team that kind of punched you around a little bit in the bowl game?
Yeah, no. I don't think it's as much about the opponent. I think it's good for college football. I think the opportunity to get two good teams from two different conferences and really kicking off the season like that is something that's special. And, you know, for me personally, it has to do with, you know, more the Florida Gators fans. And you know what? They deserve watching those kind of games, and it's something we'll continue to do in the future.
Next question, we'll go here. Left side, front row.
Coach Dan Matthews, Gridiron Now. Do you guys, when the preseason prognostications come out, expect not to be picked to win the East despite winning it the last 2 years?
Well, I guess business as usual, right? It's kind of the way it is. Kind of come to expect it. That's okay. I don't know. I mean, you know what? I like our team. I like our guys. We'll figure out a way to try to win a game here and there, and that'll be the way it is, I guess.
Center aisle on the camera.
Hi, Coach. Molly Walsh with the Tuscaloosa News. We're doing a project on should your kid or kids in general play high school football, why or why not. So what's your take on that?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at it, there's a lot of reasons to. And the thing has to do with that. I think when you look at it, even at some other sports, I think some of the indications out there from the injury standpoint, let's take a look at some of the ones in some of the other sports that don't get quite as much publicity as the game of football. But learning teamwork, learning hard work, learning dedication, learning the things that it takes to help you be successful in life, learning how to deal with failure, which is something that, you know what, is kind of getting lost today a little bit. And it teaches things that no other sport can. I think it's something that, you know, I wish everybody could experience, because it's something pretty special.
Left side here, second row.
Chris Walsh, SEC Country. Coach, are you buying into the notion that SEC or that quarterback play in the conference is going to be better this year? And if so, how much?
Well, I think you see the returning guys and obviously what they had been able to do, and now getting a year under their belt coming back. I think there's a lot of really good quarterbacks. It's one of those deals, I think, almost goes in cycles. It seems like a lot of guys are starting new quarterbacks, you know, and then those guys kind of grow, and then it becomes a position of strength, you know, where I think, like in our case, just when you talk about position of strength, you know, when we first arrived, I think we had 4 scholarship O-linemen, and this year I think we're to a point where I think our offensive line is going to be a thing of strength. So, you know, it's interesting. I think when you get those young guys in there, they develop, and I don't think there's any doubt there's good players in this league.
Over here on the right side in the middle.
Coach, I got asked a question this morning in an interview, and I didn't have the answer, and I thought maybe you could help me. Why the disparity with the East and the West, SEC East and the West? Because I know the East has great coaches. I've followed you for many years. I know you're recruiting the same players. I know facilities are there. You know, why the disparity, and what has to change for that to be different?
Sure. You know, I think it goes in cycles. I'm not a great historian on it, and yet I think there was probably a time where there was a pretty good dominance with the East over the West. I think when it does come to one of the things, you know, we are all recruiting in the same pool, you know, guys are taking the same visits, this and that. And yet, you know, when you do get into the facilities piece of it, I think when you look at what the West has done in comparison to the East over the last, say, 15 years, I think you see a big discrepancy in that one from that standpoint. And yet, it isn't all about that. You know, I think the cycle of it more than anything, and it's good programs on both sides.
Let's go left side here against the wall.
Jim, I'm not sure if you're aware of this stat, but Nick Saban is 10-0 against his former assistants, including 3-0.
Yeah, he beat the heck out of me twice here and once at Colorado State. There's no doubt about it.
I guess, what do you attribute to his success against former assistants? And then can you tell a couple stories about, you know, what, maybe in game situations where you see, I don't want to necessarily say out coach, but when he has situations when he takes advantage of that relationship?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at it, there's sometimes when that assistant goes off and maybe takes a job, he's got a pretty established program. Wouldn't you say that? Yeah. Okay. getting pretty good players, right? So I would say this. I think the way we played them at Colorado State probably propelled our program as much as anything. And then us being able to make it to back-to-back SEC championship games when probably nobody thought we would, you know, to that point. You know what? We're getting there. And I look forward to it. And yet I think that really the credit more than anything, when you go off to those programs, there's probably a reason you got that job. Maybe it needs to be built. You know, who knows, right? But he's good now.
Also here on the left side, green shirt.
Had a couple positional questions for you as far as the freshman coming in.
Yeah.
Where will TJ Slayton start for you guys?
He's a D lineman.
Okay. And then the defensive backs, do you have an idea which ones you'd like to start off at corner versus safety?
You know, we're still doing that. You know, the big thing for us, as you know, is trying to establish that nickel position. So if we're going to be able to keep Duke on the outside, right? So that's going to be kind of the number one piece when you get back there.
Next up here, front row on the left.
Hey, Jim Beresley with CBS. Defensively, you lose a lot of players up front in the front seven, but guys like Jabari Zuniga, David Reese got significant playing time last year. What do you expect from that experience, how those guys can develop going into full-time starting roles?
You know, we got hit like a lot of people do with the injury bug at some spots. You know, we lost a bunch of linebackers and then had these David Reese and Voshan Joseph and obviously Kylan Johnson all stepped in and played great. So they got some valuable experience because they, in theory, started about 5 to 6 games. Now, in that secondary, how do you replace a Marcus May, a Quincy Wilson, and Tease Tabor, who all got drafted very high? You know, I think we've got some good young talent. We won't have the experience. And yet, I think the talent's one of those things that I'm probably excited about. We're going to be young. That's all right. It's like I tell them, man, you're on scholarship to come play. Let's go.
Left side by the door.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
How you been, man?
Doing well. You've been involved in two pretty wild games against Tennessee the last 2 years. Obviously, you had the highs 2 years ago, the lows last season. What's right. kind of been the early returns from you coaching in that rivalry? And have you been involved in a game kind of like the Tennessee game last year that you guys were playing so well, then it kind of snowballed, obviously,
you know,
in the second half?
Probably happy to say I really hadn't been, you know, from the, you know, as far as that type of game, and yet actually been on the other side of it. So, but with that, you know, like I said, here's, you know, we talk about rivalries, and I go back, and I just – that's what makes college football what it is. And at a place like Florida, it isn't just one rivalry. You know, that's what's great about being there, man. You play them against these guys every week. And so I don't know, but that's something special. I mean, that game's one of those that a lot of people mark their calendars for. And that's what makes it fun.
And that was Jim McElwain earlier today here just a few minutes ago, really upstairs. Some of the Florida guys still bumping around as well. All right, when we return, Gary Danielson is on the set, and he'll be joining us here in just a few moments. We'll have Gary Danielson in just a bit. You're listening to the Tom Abraham Show here on 730-1039. The Elm.
It's our time. Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867. Here's Tom Abraham. This hour of SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by the Orthopedic Center. Highly skilled professionals, world-class care. Learn more at visittoc.com. Now back to Tom Abraham at SEC Media Days.
And welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. On location, SEC Media Days, of course, is where we are at. We'll be here through tomorrow. We will not be here Thursday morning
when Auburn is in the house to wrap things up, because to be quite honest with you, by the time we go, the place will be a ghost town. All right, it'll be all wrapped up. So it's Auburn, South Carolina, and Ole Miss coming up on Thursday morning, and we'll have all our coverage of that from back in studio. Cole Kulick will be here for that, obviously, and it'll be like old home week for him with Auburn in the house. Tomorrow it'll be Alabama and Missouri in the morning. We'll have plenty of sound from that, of course, with the Crimson Tide going in the morning. And then, and I'm not sure what the plan is for the morning show. I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know if Nick Saban goes at 9:05, and he'll be 9:05 to 9:35 in the main room. So I'm not sure if you will be getting that live or not. If not, we'll have it for you in the afternoon. But I would think that they might just jump on that and get that in there live. And then Barry Odom also goes tomorrow morning with the Missouri Tigers, and then Kentucky and Kevin Sumlin and Texas A&M in the afternoon. So all of that is coming up tomorrow here at SEC Media Days. My feeling is, Gary, see, remember I told you how fluid this thing is? Gary got cherry-picked by another station. We had the Jim McElwain thing on. He came down through here, and he got picked off, and he's a very nice guy, so he, you know, he's willing to do whatever and talk to whoever, and so that's what he ended up doing. And I'll be honest with you, I'm going to push him to the top of the hour, I think. You know what I mean, T-Mac? Because, I get him. Well, unless he's going to come down here right now. I guess he's going to come down. I'll tell you what, T-Mac, hold your spot, all right? Hold your top of the hour break for a minute, because Gary Daniels is just coming over to our set right now as we speak. Of course, Gary with the SEC.
I'm here.
You got cherry-picked is what happened. I know exactly what's going on. You got cherry-picked. How are you, my friend?
Good. Ready to go.
I was just talking to Adam Zucker. He does such a nice job
in
the studio.
He does a great job.
Does a great job?
I really thought for a while he might even be in the running to be replaced for.
Yeah.
You know, we've been really lucky to get Brad. I mean, that was a great hire for CBS, but I think Adam is just so solid.
Well, no, and I'm not telling stories out of school, because he told us this story last year on the air too. Yeah, you know, young wife, kids, and everything else. And he said, to be honest with you, I like just doing the studio.
I know, he told me that too.
The travel, it's not easy what you guys do.
Absolutely.
All that travel and prep.
Well, it's a different lifestyle. Yeah. And somebody asked me, like, you look so ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 65 years old now.
Yeah.
And I go, I think why it works for me? I get some time off. I mean, I admire what you guys do.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do a college football show every day. I would burn out on it.
We try not to.
I know.
I'll be honest with you. I tried to do some basketball.
But some guys do. Some guys do. You know, like.
Well, we get shot. If we don't do some college football every single day. David Moulton is my longtime personal friend. That's how I met you. And David would have the same thing. And I've done radio in New York and then in the South the rest of the time, Florida and Alabama, Tennessee. And it is if you don't if you don't hit it every day.
But I step aside. I have 100 requests. And I go, listen, call me in July. I really got to get away from it. And that way I'm ready and recharged, ready to go.
Well, it's funny because when I talked to Tony Barnhart earlier, we do a thing called Tradition Tuesday. We were talking about the tradition of SEC Media Days and how this all started, Skywriters and all this stuff back in the day.
Right.
And Tony told the story, and we talked about how even 20 years ago, when you went out and talked to coaches and players, it was the first time you had any contact with them in like 3-4 months.
Right.
Now it's constant. It never goes away.
I really do think that this is a,
I think the NFL's made a mistake doing it, to be honest with you. I think it's kind of hurt the NFL a little bit because there's never a break. You never want it.
Yeah, I don't know if these media days are even needed anymore. It's great for you guys to get to talk some people, but there's so much information out there now.
Yeah.
I really stay away from a lot of it. I don't read these magazines because what happens is I get into my head and I start spitting out stuff that somebody else thought of.
Yeah.
I like to keep my ideas to myself and figure it out myself, because anybody can read these things. I just try to.
It's why I never listen to other shows. You know,
yeah,
if
exactly.
If I listen to another show, I'm going to find myself saying something that somebody said, right. And if I say it, I say it generically. These are good resources because these guys go. I mean, every player's names and things like that. And is that kid a junior or a senior?
Yep.
I can go find
it.
In there. Gary Danielson with us. You mentioned Brad Nessler. You guys did work some together last year, and it was a great run with Vern, certainly. But there's got to be a rejuvenated thing anytime there's a change like that going into this year with a new team right off the top, right?
Well, you know, last year this kind of kicked off the farewell tour for Vern. And, you know, we had an idea what it could be. It was just so much better than we thought. The whole league got involved, the coaches, the players, and then even the fans. And it was a fitting tribute to Vern the way it ended, and it was great. One of the things I was hopeful for that, you know, Vern has built this job, basically.
Yeah.
The play-by-play job as I think the top job in college sports now, the CBS play-by-play 330. And I was just hoping we would find someone that would take this job that could take that status and stature of what Vern had built. And we were pretty lucky to get Brad. I mean, he's one of the top guys, pro, college, whatever. And for him to take this job and leave ESPN and ABC for this job, the SEC should be thrilled. And I am. We did 7 years together, so I know what he can do. And
That's right. I forgot about that. You guys worked together doing Big Ten games. And
ESPN, and, we did. And then we went to ABC together, and we got separated. Management decision, I was put with Brent, and he was with Bob Greasy. And, you know, those things happen, but we're back together now, and it's pretty easy. It's going to be a great transition. The fans are going to love it.
And I also saw, looking at the schedule, more doubleheaders than I've seen in the past as
well,
which makes me wonder, who's doing the doubleheader game?
Well, it'll be Carter.
Oh, Carter, yeah.
Carter.
And that's another rising star.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, he's good.
And Aaron Taylor and Rick Neuheisel, I believe, will be doing the game. It's a three-man booth this year.
Rick is is Rick putting the guitar down, or is he still going to be singing in the pregame?
I think he's doing both. I think he really is,
You're going to do both. I've been having, you know, we featured the East a lot today because of Florida and Georgia being here.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with Florida only having three true road games this season.
Right.
And looking at those road games being at South Carolina and at
they
Missouri.
They got the best
and
schedule, right?
They got the best schedule.
Right.
I'm like 10-2, and that's what a loss to Florida State. I think Florida's a 10-win team this year.
Well, if you go, this is the year of the quarterback, obviously, in the SEC. You know, I mean, it's been a while, maybe 2013, since there's been this kind of talent. But if you go all the way down, you know, you get to about number 10 before you start saying, does Florida's quarterback now fit in? And that's, in modern football, if you got a big question mark as Will Muschamp and McElwain will tell you, you know, we've been very fortunate. We've been winning with great defense. I don't think Florida's defense is going to be to the level it's been the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. It can't be. That took too many good players off of that team. So we will see. Yes, schedule-wise, I'd have to agree. I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. I think Kentucky will continue to improve. I think Vanderbilt will continue to improve. My sleeper last year was Missouri. These teams that run these hurry-up offenses, their defenses just face too many plays. They can't make it to the end of the year. So I just don't know. Listen, because of schedule, you'd have to give Florida the best chance. But, boy, we've learned this. Going to this battle without a quarterback, that's going to be tough.
I was just stunned by the Malik Zaire thing because
You know, I have to admit,
I thought Kyle, you know, I thought the Felipe Franks kid was coming along.
Right.
You'd have somebody around for 3 years and you could stabilize that deal. To go get another transfer that couldn't beat out DeShone Kizer, who went 4-8, I'm like, really?
You know, that bothered me a little bit, but not as much as because of his style is so different from the style that Jim is trying to build at Florida.
Right.
He's trying to build a pro look with a pocket passer. Well, Malik Zaire can't run that offense. So now are you going to have a different offense for Malik? Are they going to give in to the fact that they can't run their offense? And if things get tough, what do? Do you go to a option running, triple option, zone read offense with Malik, and then you come back with Franks?
Right.
I just didn't see it as a great fit. I have not talked to Mac since this. I guess you just don't turn down a great player. Plus, you know, we did those two games in the SEC championship. I mean, Florida basically got there without a quarterback, so I guess they're figuring any quarterback
be
will do.
Exactly. The funny thing is Jacob Eason, you know, checks off all the marks in terms of what you look at in a pro-style quarterback. But some of the Georgia people that I talked to said, you know, if they run into a wall or have some struggles at Notre Dame, you know, look out for this kid,
Jake Fromm. Yeah,
Jake Fromm has got a big-time brain.
He does.
Understands the game and has a great work ethic. That's been questioned a little bit with Eason. If he matures in terms of work ethic and whatnot.
Well, Tommy, you know what I think about Eason is it was tough for him. Yeah. That's the worst set of Georgia receivers I've seen since I've been in the league.
The line wasn't great either.
The line was below average. Chubb's coming off an injury. They had youth on the defensive line. Their secondary, I mean, I just looked at the Georgia team and goes, what happened? There's no talent on this team. And I couldn't believe it. And now you throw a freshman quarterback in there with a new staff. Kirby was still struggling with a lot of decisions. I just don't think it's fair to throw it on Jacob Eason. I thought he showed a lot of flashes for a freshman quarterback playing in this league. If they could put some talent around him, I think he'll be fine. But you're all right. Fromm has got a big resume, and he's a little bit more mobile. And the temptation with these coaches are when things aren't working, let's go to a running quarterback.
Yeah. All right, finally, before I let you go, there's been a lot of talk about this dynastic Alabama team that's gotten even more, some people think even more separation from the rest of the league. Ultimately, as a guy who covers it and does these games and whatnot, a lot of times people love a dynasty. They love when the Yankees are great or when the Montreal Canadiens or whoever are great. But on the other hand, is it hurting at all? Does it hurt the thing that where it seems like the league doesn't have as many great teams as it did 5 years ago?
Well, the league was definitely better 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, there's no doubt. But I do attribute it to Alabama, but I think a lot of the coaching staffs are suffering from their belief that there's a shortcut to beating Alabama. Like, if we go the hurry up, no huddle with Johnny Manziel at quarterback,
and trick them,
we can beat them. Yeah, that's possible in a game. If you get Deshaun Watson throwing three back shoulder throws and Clemson has 15 guys drafted in the last 2 years.
And they run a pick play.
And not the last one, but the first one. Yeah. And, you get the run pass play for Auburn when Nick Marshall hit Sammy Coates there right at the end of the game. Everybody says, oh, that's how you beat them. You try to trick them. I think the fundamentals of the teams trying to beat them has really hurt the league. Texas A&M thought there was a shortcut with athletic quarterbacks. They've gone through three of them now, and it doesn't. Trevor Knight was fine.
Yeah.
But Trevor Knight had to produce 150 yards on the ground and 200 yards passing, or they lose. Josh Dobbs had to run for 150 and throw for 250, or they lose. Chad Kelly had to run for 100 and throw for 300, or they lose. Drew Locke has to throw for 350, or they lose. That much pressure on one player in this league is not going to work. They need more balance. As much as LSU was in one direction, these other teams have drifted too far in the other direction. Look at Gus. Gus, he's fine with Cam Newton, but we didn't have Cam Newton. What do you got?
Yeah.
Nick Marshall got him through a year with a good defense, but when he didn't have those guys, they got nothing.
Yeah, well, in three games, really, that year that they win, it could have been losses, and then everything changes if it goes the other way.
Alabama is going to move back more towards the middle. Somebody asked me what Jalen Hurts, how he can improve this year. Jalen Hurts is going to have to learn to be more of a game manager instead of an athlete, and he'll be better for Alabama.
Yeah, I said if he has the total yards,
they won't be as good.
If he had they're not as good. If he has it's the same thing with 2,000 yard rushers.
Totally.
You know, the Lions would bury
exactly.
How many 2,000 yard rushers in the NFL won a Super Bowl?
It happened once
with the Terrell Davis. I mean, it's you can't be that one sided a team. All right, Gary, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you've been busy, and it's always good.
Way it goes.
I promise we won't talk until the season because I know you don't like. We'll talk golf. I call you. We'll talk golf.
No. I'm ready now. Talk it easy. High five.
All right, man. Thanks. Gary Danielson, always excellent with Gary. All right. There you go. That's what's happening now. That's why I got T-Mac in studio. Make sure he can take care of that blowing a break up. All right, we'll get it all straightened out at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Abraham. We are out here on location, SEC Media Days. That'd be a pretty good one. If you missed it, they had a pretty good one. Back with after this. Something you want to do now.
7:30 and 103.9 The Ump. More sports.